NBC is honored to present transcribed an address by the distinguished religious leader Dr. Abba Hillel Silver, rabbi of the temple in Cleveland, Ohio. Rabbi Silver's address, entitled On the Threshold of the Fourth Century, is given at the biennial convention of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations meeting in New York City. Rabbi Silver.
My dear friends, the rabbis say that when Jacob summoned his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together, and I will tell you what shall befall you in the days to come," the spirit of prophecy departed from him. No one can foretell a people's future. No one can know whose hand will draw the threads of the future on the loom of time, or what the pattern will be. 50 years ago, no one could have foreseen the practical disappearance of European Jewry. 100 years ago, no one could have foretold that in the United States there would arise the largest Jewish community in all history. At best, we can project our hopes on the basis of our present knowledge and draw reasonable inferences from perceptible trends. The question to which I would like to address myself this evening is, can we think hopefully of the next century as Jews, as Americans, as members of the human family? For these three are closely interrelated. I believe that we can. I believe that we have every right to do so. Though we cannot be dogmatic about it, for human progress is neither guaranteed nor automatic, nor can we ignore the fact that time and again, the unforeseen and the unpredictable in history have upset all man's most careful calculations. I believe in the first place that this age in which we live is a great age, and that we are moving towards an even greater age. In characterizing our age as great, I am thinking in terms of social progress and social welfare, in terms of human advancement and civilization. More is being done in our day for the improvement of the conditions of the common man, for the raising of his standard of living, his health, his education, and for his protection against the disabilities of sickness, unemployment, and old age than in any generation, than any five generations in the past. Never were more determined efforts made to bring about a fairer sharing of the wealth that is produced and a better way of life for all. I do not wish to overdraw the picture. I am not suggesting that our age is approaching idyllic perfection or that the millennium is just around the corner. The important thing to consider, however, is not whether we are on the eve of the millennium, but whether the major trends of our age are in the direction of the hoped-for good society or away from it. Is our age trying to eradicate poverty and illiteracy, and to raise the standards of living of people regardless of race or creed or color? Is it trying to satisfy the legitimate aspirations of peoples to national freedom and independence? Is it trying to organize the world for peace and for international cooperation? I believe that in all these major trends, our age has given welcome evidence of great determination and of considerable progress. It is moving purposefully in the right direction. The abolition of war, the reduction of poverty, and the elimination of racial inequality. In our day, this forward thrust of man has encountered the stubborn and insolent resistance of materialism, of Nazism, of fascism, and as regards method also of communist dictatorship. These have violently resisted the spiritual aspirations which constitute man's wave of the future. They put shackles on man even when they promised him larger freedoms. They divided and stratified men even when they prated about a classless society. They fomented war even when they preached peace. But the unmoving tides of man's spirit, fathoms deep and irresistible, have now swept over the shattered ruins of some of these sinister aberrations and dark conspiracies of the rebels against light, though they have not yet entirely obliterated them, and the tides are now whirling around the bastions of the remaining dictatorships of the earth. They will have to succumb. They will surely succumb. They cannot in the long run win in the contest for man's heart and man's loyalties. The coming age too, my dear friends, in my belief, will be a great age for America. The next 100 years at least will likely be known as the American century, in the same sense as the 19th century was known as the century of Great Britain. Destiny has singled out our beloved country, the foremost democracy on earth, to give leadership to the world and to lead mankind out of the grave social, political, and economic predicament in which it finds itself. And I believe that American leadership will prove itself equal to the challenge. If it will take counsel of faith and not of fear, and if it will be guided by the prophetic insights and the wide perspectives of the founding fathers of this republic. To this kind of leadership, the world will ultimately respond. A leadership which does not wait on the occasion, but makes it. Which is prepared to take calculated risks for peace. Which is eager for negotiation and conference to settle all issues which endanger the peace of the world. A leadership which exerts sincere and unremitting pressure for limitation of armaments and the lifting of the crushing military burden from the backs of the peoples of the earth. A leadership which aggressively plans for worldwide cooperation to help and guide the backward and impoverished peoples of the earth to higher levels of agricultural and industrial development, of well-being, of health, of education. A leadership which seeks the liberation of all dominated colonial peoples and extends friendly help to them in adjusting themselves to their new way of life. This kind of leadership, which is not dictation, which is not imposed by our wealth and power, which is not enmeshed and hampered by commitments to the imperial interest of colonial empires, and which flows naturally from the headwaters of our great liberal traditions and history, this kind of leadership is sure to rekindle the hopes of the world. And I believe that the American people will earnestly strive to be worthy of the challenge and the opportunities of the American century. Finally, I believe that it will be a great age for American Jewry. If the catastrophe of war does not shatter its security and life. As a minority, we are helpless against the ravages of hate and demagoguery which war and economic depressions unleash. But given peace and economic stability, the American Jewish community will move forward and develop. It will expand its cultural and religious life and institutions and will make worthy contributions to the total life of America. The last 300 years are warrant for it. Our beginnings here were humble, as were the beginnings of all peoples who came to these shores. Steadily through the years, and more rapidly in the last 75 years, our numbers increased and we shared eagerly and gratefully in the growing and evolving life of America. Our people became in outlook, in confidence, in hopefulness, true children of the new world, and in service and devotion, loyal and proud citizens of the United States. They served it patriotically in peace and in war. They made creditable contributions to its material prosperity, to its political and social progress, its democratic institutions, to labor and industry, to its arts, science, literature, and music. They supported generously all the philanthropic and social agencies and institutions of their communities, Jewish and non-Jewish alike. They have not been an unworthy or unimportant part of the colorful, unique, and noble mosaic which is America. Nor have they ignored or forgotten their own religious heritage. They remain faithful to it. Upon the shores of the new land, they built their synagogue, their schools, and their institutions of learning and philanthropy, which have always embodied the ethical ideals and the way of life of our people. They did not isolate themselves from the lot of their fellow Jews in other parts of the world. They remained bound to them in fraternal solicitude. They helped them in their need. They came to their defense when attacked. They poured out their generosity when tragedy overtook them. And they rallied to the task of building the State of Israel when the historic moment arrived, and they have undergirded it with their support and unflagging interest since then. If the American Jews of the coming decades will carry on uninterruptedly and with wisdom and discrimination, putting first things first and accentuating the positive and indispensable enterprises of Jewish life, they will make the numerically largest Jewish community in the world also one of the greatest in terms of faith and culture and scholarship. We are in the growth stage of our history here, a fruitful bough by a nourishing spring. Religion is likely to become more and not less a vital part of the American culture as science frees itself more and more from its mechanistic incantations and dogmas, as men become more and more disenchanted with the bravery of all their tinkling ornaments and gadgets which give them everything save security and dignity and happiness. And as democracy is compelled in its struggle for survival against materialistic forms of dictatorship to return more and more to its spiritual origins and sanctions. And American Judaism will not find itself in the days to come in a religiously negative environment, and it will react accordingly. What may endanger our Jewish future here is not conscious escapism or deliberate assimilationist tendencies, such as characterize some Jewish communities elsewhere and at other times. Rather, a too facile adaptability, an unconscious drift, and a carefree relaxation of all disciplines, not out of conviction, but out of sheer indifference, such as, for example, belonging to synagogues, but not worshiping in them, or sending children to schools which are so limited as to time that they cannot really give them an adequate Jewish education, or in very many instances not giving them any education at all, or emptying our homes of all Jewish content. Too many of our people want an easygoing religion, one which does not interfere with their leisure, their sleep, or their television, which calls for no study and no observance, which does not challenge or disturb them, a religion without any spiritual travail, without any stab of thought or conscience, without any sacrifice, the religion of a self-pampering people. No religion has ever survived in that kind of emotional and intellectual vacuum, Judaism least of all. It is a great virtue in our people that they are a generous people in heart, charitable and responsive to all human need and suffering. It is a noble tradition of Israel and a byproduct of a religion which foremost among all the religions of mankind made charity and loving kindness central in its code of human conduct. But Judaism, my friends, is much more than charity, and the charitable impulse alone will not preserve our faith and our people. This book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall have good success. No Jewish community ever survived for long which did not cultivate Jewish learning and study, and which did not cultivate the prescribed way of Jewish life, at least in its essentials. The axe must never be permitted to exalt itself over the man who wields it. We are warned by one of our great prophets. It is not enough to pay lip service to religion. This is now a very patriotic thing to do, and highly endorsed politically in democratic countries as part of an overall strategy in the Cold War. But religion is not political strategy. It is a man's humble way to God. It is intended primarily not for others, but for ourselves. It is a personal quest and a consecration. It is a form of voluntary bondage for freedom's sake. A self-imposed discipline for greater spiritual efficiency. We must work at our religion to have it work for us. It is not even enough for Jews to erect beautiful synagogues and centers as we Jews have done and properly done in this blessed and gracious land. These are necessary and important, and when we build them, it is only proper that their architecture should embody beauty as well as utility. But edifices have meaning only if within their precincts men and women and children are inspired and instructed in the ways of personal piety, religious study, and the quest of God and the good life. This is the true measure of their success. Only then are they the living shrines of a living faith. Otherwise, they are only sad memorials to a glory that is departing and to embers dying upon forsaken altars. What we should fear most in this land is the rise of a generation of prosperous Jews who have no spiritual anchorage, or a generation of clever, restless Jews of quick ferment and high voltage, rooted in no religious tradition, reverent of no moral code, ignorant of all Jewish learning, and held to social responsibility by no inner spiritual restraint, who will range and bluster all over the American scene, from literature and art to politics and government, and will commit their fellow Jews in the eyes of the American people. Such floating minds are a danger to any people, but especially to a minority group. If American Jewry of tomorrow will restore what has become peripheral in our life to the center again, the synagogue, the school, the academy, the religious disciplines of Judaism, if it will recapture the wisdom of our ancient teachers who admonished us that the study of the Torah outweighs all other commandments, for it leads directly to all of them, then American Jewry is destined to enjoy a resplendent century of spiritual growth in this gracious land. The lay leaders of American Jewry have really not settled in their own minds on the true nature of this American Jewish community, what they believe it to be, what they want it to be. Somewhere there is a confusing and stultifying inner contradiction. They contend that it is a religious community, always has been and must so remain, but they act as if it were a secular community whose chief, if not exclusive, concern is philanthropy and defense strategy. Their national organizations, their national publications, their national convocations, their energies, their budgets are only remotely related to religion. The scope of the American synagogue, my dear friends, may broaden in the years to come. It may respond to new initiatives. It may make new adjustments to meet new needs and may profit from new insights. It may come to include, as it already has in some instances, psychiatry and other forms of guidance and helpfulness. It may gain in unity as the sharp edges of denominational distinctions are worn away by time, although I, for one, fail to see the advantage of bringing everybody under one umbrella. Its idiom and emphasis may change in the next 100 years, in the next 1,000 years. But the core of its faith, I'm sure, will remain unchanged, for that core is timeless and changeless. The belief that there is a God indwelling in all nature and yet transcending it, near to man in all his needs and yet beyond man's comprehension. That man is fashioned out of the earth but is nevertheless made in the spiritual image of God. That bound as he is by his physical and mental limitations, he is nevertheless unbounded in his moral aspirations and is free to determine his own spiritual progress. That both body and soul are of God, and that the whole of man, body, mind, and soul is sacred. That all men are equal in their essential humanity. That there is but one moral law for all. That life is good and is a gracious gift of God. And that the evil which exists in the world can in large measure be overcome, and that in the overcoming of it lies the very meaning and adventure of human life. That progress is real, even if not uninterrupted. That a golden age of universal justice and brotherhood and peace awaits the human race and can be hastened by the efforts of the human race. And that man's spiritual concern should be primarily with this life, this side of the grave, since the hidden things belong to God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children. We owe it to ourselves, dear friends, and to our people, we Jews of America, the most favored and fortunate of all world Jewry, to take over now the glory and the burden of our heritage, the Sevel HaYerusha, now that the Jewish communities of Europe no longer exist. All through the 19th century, we were the hinterland of European Jewry. Today, we are the heartland of the entire Jewish diaspora. Ours is now the mandate, the challenge, the opportunity. Who knows whether we have not come to our highest state just for such a time as this. And finally, dear friends, a great century also awaits the newly established State of Israel, whose 5th anniversary is being celebrated this week. Here, too, I build my hope on a continuing peace, given peace. The amazing energy of its people, which has so miraculously transformed that country in a few years, will continue unabated, for it is the stored up energy and hopes of centuries. Already close to 1.5 million Jews live in Israel, and it seems destined to become, next to the United States, the largest center of Jews in the world and its most important cultural center. Many grave problems confront the new state, political, economic, and social. But knowing their drive and their dynamism, their pride and their devotion, I am confident that they will solve them with our help and the assistance of their fellow Jews throughout the world. And if history is any guide, Israel will not remain just another small Levantine state on the shores of the Eastern Mediterranean. Greatness will come from it. Cultural, spiritual, scientific, as greatness came from that little land once before. Disraeli wrote somewhere, all great things have been done by little nations. This certainly holds true of Judea and Greece. It would be surprising indeed if the returning sons and daughters of our people many of them so generously dowered with talent and some with genius, so eager for expression, so long suppressed, so determined to vindicate themselves and their people and reply with greatness of mind and spirit to the cruelty and aspersions of the long frustrated years. It would be surprising indeed if this people will not produce in course of time in the exciting and stimulating environment of Eretz Yisrael, where every history-mantled hill and valley speaks of ancient glory and of the imperishable achievements of their ancestors, things of beauty, things of truth and insight, rare and precious, which will again astound the world. We shall eagerly watch and earnestly pray for the progress of Israel. We shall continue our cooperation with it in every way. We can give much to it. It can and has already given much to us. It has much to learn, and so have we. It will have much to teach us, and so will we. Its people will have need of Judaism and of its religious disciplines as much as we. Nationalism is no substitute for religion in Israel, in the United States, or in any other country. And so, good friends, I build my prospects for the coming century on hope and on greatness. It will not be a century of unalloyed serenity. It will not be all utopia. And now professional anti-defamationists and public relationists will still find much work to do, for the age of universal goodwill will probably not be fully consummated in the next 100 years. The years of God are long years, and the generations of man are as a day in his sight. But it can be a glorious century for humanity, for America, and for our people and our faith, if we try to make it so. There is no determinism in human history. Man's spiritual as well as his intellectual progress is conditioned by man's own initiative and strength of his purpose. The most common word in the ethical messages of our scriptures is the little word, im. If you will hearken unto my voice, if you will obey my commandments, if you return, O Israel, if you do not waver, the nation will bless themselves in you. Man alone must give the answer. The tools are here. The opportunities are many. The rewards are great. The kingdom of God awaits only the faithful and resolute men determined to build it.
NBC has just presented transcribed an address by Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver, given at the Biennial Convention of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, which has been held in New York City. The subject of Rabbi Silver's talk, On the Threshold of the Fourth Century. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.